I know you are a big fan of Lord of the Rings, just as I am. So I have something special to share with you. Imagine carrying a piece of Middle-earth with you right on your finger. Well, now you can, thanks to the incredible Lord of the Rings collection from Manly Bands. These aren't just any rings. These are officially licensed, meticulously crafted rings inspired by the legendary world of J.R.R. Tolkien. Whether you're channeling the wisdom of Gandalf, the elegance of Legolas, or even the mystique of the One Ring itself, there's a design in this collection that's perfect for you. On my finger right now is my personal favorite, the sleek Aragorn ring. For you, my fellow wanderer, I have something special. 25% off your entire Manly Bands order. Visit ringspodcast.com and tap the gold bar at the top. There you'll find an exclusive link and code that gets you 25% off your entire order. So whether you're in the market for a wedding band, a statement piece, or just something cool to show off your love for Middle-earth, don't miss out on this exclusive deal. Again, visit ringspodcast.com, tap the gold bar, and save that 25%. These rings are as timeless as the tales they represent, so order yours today. The Black Riders close in. Frodo can barely stay conscious. The world turns pale and empty, and death, or something far worse, presses in. 9 ancient servants of the shadow against 1 small hobbit with a fading sword and a single desperate voice. But is he really alone? Here, at the edge of the Ford of Bruin Inn, Tolkien reminds us what kind of story this really is. It's not about strength. It's not about power. It's about fellowship, defiance, and the old names that evil still fears. Today we finish our 4-part wandering of the chapter Flight to the Ford from J.R.R. Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring. Get your free reader's guide to this chapter at ringspodcast.com/flight. I'm Aaron, your guide to wandering Middle-earth, and this is Lore of the Rings. Now, let's wander. Let's start with something that can easily get overlooked in this chapter, and that's the deep emphasis Tolkien places on fellowship, bravery, and the symbolism of the journey itself. Even in these final desperate moments of flight to the Ford, these ideas are running right beneath the surface. As the Black Riders close in and Frodo grows weaker, Glorfindel tries to reassure Frodo by saying, quote, "I doubt very much if your friends would be in danger if you were not with them. It is you, Frodo, and that which you bear that brings us all peril." This simple line calls back to something Gandalf told Frodo much earlier in the book, when they were discussing who might accompany him on this journey. Gandalf's advice was to take with him, quote, "anyone that you can trust, and who is willing to go by your side, and that you would be willing to take into unknown perils." That word, willing, matters. The loyalty of Sam, Merry, and Pippin isn't born out of duty or command, but from love, friendship, and choice. And now, here at the Ford of Bruin Inn, that choice means they're in mortal danger. But what do they do? When the riders advance, we're told Frodo catches a brief, flickering glimpse of his friends attacking the Black Riders with flaming brands. Quote, "It seemed to him that he saw, beyond the riders that hesitated on the shore, a shining figure of white light, and behind it ran small, shadowy forms waving flames that flared red in the gray mist that was falling over the world." It's this quiet bravery that Tolkien loves to celebrate. Frodo's friends aren't great warriors, and even with Strider and Glorfindel, they're outnumbered. And yet, they run into the fray anyway. Fire, here in this chapter, has been a symbol of hope, comfort, and healing, and now, at the Ford, fire transforms into a symbol of defiance, a light against the shadow. Think back to when Aragorn drives off the Nazgul with flaming brands on Weathertop. Fire is hope made tangible. And I don't think it's coincidence that this moment happens just after Frodo passes through a tunnel. Tolkien uses tunnels and enclosed passageways again and again as symbols of transition, moments when characters leave one state of being behind and enter another. Earlier, we saw the hobbits passing through the dark tunnel into the Old Forest when they left the Shire, and much later Frodo and Sam will face the terror of Shelob's lair. Here, as they ride through the narrow, dark passage and out into the open, where the final stretch to the Ford lies, it marks a liminal moment. Frodo is symbolically passing from life into death and back again, a moment of transformation. And then comes the Flood, one of the most vividly described pieces of natural power in the Fellowship of the Ring. The waters of Bruinen are called forth as a defense. We will learn later that even this act was one of friendship. Tolkien describes the wave as, quote, a plumed cavalry of waves, white flames, white riders upon white horses with frothing manes. Notice how even in this scene of supernatural power, it's not one hero who saves the day. It's a communal act. Glorfindel, Strider, the other hobbits, the river itself, and we get a sense that these ancient powers, allied with the courage of simple hobbits, can still turn back the darkness. In the film version, of course, this scene is radically changed and condensed. Arwen takes Glorfindel's role, and the hobbits don't get that small moment of bravery, especially Frodo, as we'll explore in just a few minutes. It's a shame because here in the book, Tolkien reminds us that the great stories of Middle-earth aren't driven by singular heroes alone, but by the small, steady, defiant acts of many working together. Before we go on, I need to give a shout out to a super fan that connected with me on Threads. To Mrs. Viking Reads, I'm so glad that I found your post about reading Fellowship of the Ring, and the cover of your edition looks beautiful. Now, if you would like to connect, drop me a line on Threads. There's a link in the show notes, or tap the thread symbol at ringspodcast.com. I am always at your service. Now, as we move deeper into this final scene of flight to the Ford, Tolkien turns our attention to one of the most haunting ideas in The Lord of the Rings, the nature of evil and the terrifying threat of fading. Frodo, at this point, is barely holding on. The Morgul Blade wound he took at Weathertop is doing more than just physical harm. It's pulling him into the Wraith world. And Tolkien gives us one of the most quietly devastating lines in the entire chapter. Quote, "During the day, things about him faded to shadows of ghostly gray. He almost welcomed the coming of night, for then the world seemed less pale and empty." This is a stunning reversal, a twisted inversion of what we'd expect. We usually associate light with safety, clarity, and goodness, but here, for Frodo, the light is painful, the world is pale and hollow, and the darkness seems comforting. It's one of Tolkien's most subtle depictions of the long, numbing reach of evil. It doesn't always come with marching armies and shadows and screams. Sometimes it comes with emptiness, with the steady draining away of self. The ring is part of this, of course. The closer Frodo gets to Mordor, the stronger the ring's influence becomes. And in this moment, as the Black Riders approach, both the ring and the riders are commanding him to wait, to submit, to give in. He feels reluctant to flee, not because of bravery or strategy, but because something in him is being overpowered. But Frodo, in a moment of desperation, raises his sword and shouts at the riders, quote, go back to the land of Mordor, and follow me no more. This attempt at banishment is met with laughter and scorn, the effect of which leaves Frodo nearly devoid of strength, as he lamely whispers one last time, quote, go back. In this moment, Tolkien tells us that, quote, Frodo had not the power of Bombadil. It's a puzzling detail, I think. Why mention Bombadil in this critical exchange? Remember back in the Barrowdowns, Tom Bombadil dismissed the Barrowite with a simple command. So far, Bombadil has been the only force for good that Frodo has seen that could outright command evil and be obeyed. But Frodo doesn't have that kind of power. Hence why Tolkien would remind us that Frodo doesn't have the power of Bombadil. And that's what makes the Black Riders so frightening. They aren't just villains in cloaks. In this scene, for the first time, Tolkien gives us a glimpse of their true physical form. Quote, they were robed in white and gray. Swords were naked in their pale hands, helms were on their heads, their cold eyes glittered, and they called to him with fell voices. These aren't shadows anymore. They are fully present. visible to Frodo as he slips further into the unseen realm. It's a glimpse of what he is becoming. Because the great danger here isn't death, it's fading, becoming a wraith, losing one's sense of self entirely. Evil, in Tolkien's world, isolates. It consumes identity and leaves behind only a tool of the Dark Lord's will to dominate. And Frodo is one step away from crossing that threshold.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the Roaring Twenties. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Finally, in the middle of all this darkness, in the face of overwhelming evil and his own failing strength, Frodo does something quite extraordinary. He resists. Frodo, in his desperation, calls upon names. Ancient names. Names that carry the memory of defiance against the darkest powers this world has ever known. And these are names that Tolkien has brilliantly and subtly foreshadowed, so much so that this chapter is a masterclass in delivering that sudden joyous turn from the deepest despair, Eucatastrophe, as Tolkien called it. The Black Riders, fully assembled for the first time in this story, advance towards Frodo. They have laughed off his attempt at banishing them. They beckon for him to submit. His once defiant voice has grown to a thin whisper. The riders call to him with deadly voices. Yet this is the moment of Eucatastrophe. Quote, "By Elbereth and Lúthien the Fair," Frodo said with a last effort, "you shall have neither the ring nor me." The effect is so powerful that instead of laughing and scorning Frodo, the chief of the Nazgul is done playing games, so much so that he, quote, "stood up menacing in his stirrups and raised up his hand." Frodo was stricken dumb. His sword broke and fell out of his shaking hand. We need to pause at this moment. What is happening here? Why does Frodo turn to those names in particular? And why the reaction from the Black Riders? Tolkien is not being random here. He's not just name-dropping some unknown entity into the story, nor is he doing some incoherent world-building by haphazardly throwing in some in-universe history. These names have been foreshadowed in several moments, all masterfully culminating in this very scene. Let me remind you of Gildor, the elf that Frodo met as he was crossing the Shire. At first, Frodo recognizes Gildor and his company as high elves because they sing about Elbereth. As they finish their conversation that night, Gildor bestows a prayer-like blessing on Frodo, quote, "May Elbereth protect you." And the Ford of Bruinen is not the first time that Frodo has called to Elbereth for protection. He cries to her on the night of the attack at Weathertop, which Strider would later declare was, quote, "more deadly than Frodo's sword to the chief of the Nazgul." Who is Elbereth? Well, in short, she is the Lady of the Stars, the greatest of the Valar, the divine powers that govern Middle-earth. She set the stars in the heavens in defiance of Morgoth when the world was young. From Tolkien's The Silmarillion, we learn that Elbereth recognized Morgoth, Sauron's master, from the very beginning, and, quote, "rejected him, and he hated her, and feared her, more than all the others." Okay, there's a lot happening there, so let's not be hasty. Morgoth was Sauron's master, the Dark Lord, before Sauron took that title. Morgoth feared Elbereth, and she saw right through him from the start. Her stars are a defiance of Morgoth, a place of, quote, "light and high beauty, forever beyond the reach of evil." A constant reminder that, quote, "in the end, the shadow was only a small and passing thing." Let's bring this all together. When Frodo calls upon Elbereth, of course the chief of the Nazgul is going to take that seriously. Elbereth is the greatest power to threaten, humiliate, and defy not just his master, but his master's master. But Frodo doesn't stop there, because if there were any other name just as powerful, humiliating, and defiant to Morgoth as Elbereth, then it is the name of Lúthien the Fair. Lúthien is one of the greatest figures in all of Middle-earth's history. Strider told the hobbits her story in just the previous chapter, before the attack at Weathertop. Lúthien and Beren's story is one of love that transcends evil, darkness, and death itself. Beset with an impossible task, with no hope of actually accomplishing it, Lúthien and Beren descend to the depths of Hel to deceive the Master of Lies himself and reclaim just one of the three brilliant Silmarils. As a prelude to that moment, Lúthien saved Beren from Sauron's dungeons after completely humiliating Sauron. At the end of their duel, quote, Lúthien came to Sauron and said that he should be stripped of his raiment of flesh and his ghost be sent quaking back to Morgoth. And she said, there everlastingly thy naked self shall endure the torment of his scorn, pierced by his eyes, unless thou yield to me the mastery of thy tower. I mean, wow. Who would not shake from fear and surrender to such a piercing power as Lúthien was able to command? So these two names, Elbereth and Lúthien, represent the most humiliating moments for the most evil lords of Middle-earth. These are two female characters who never wavered in the struggle against darkness, who are the literal shining examples of defiance against the shadow. How could the Nazgul react in any other way than to strike Frodo dumb so that he could not speak? Such names are a more powerful weapon against them than any sword or torch or river flood. To me, this incredible moment reveals the depth of Tolkien's brilliance. These stories form a cohesive whole, with a depth and richness that can never be matched. This precise moment for Frodo has been subtly foreshadowed for us as readers. If we are reading carefully, we find these clues that culminate in this defiant oath, an oath, by the way, that is 100% correct about the future. The writers never have the ring or Frodo. But it's the subtlety that I find so brilliant. Tolkien isn't preaching or beating these details into our skulls. In fact, if you read only with the knowledge that he's given us, you'd likely miss it and just think that Frodo is calling on some great names from history, which is fine for the surface-level reading. But the setup here is so careful, so deliberate, and still not so in-your-face that it makes total and complete sense when it happens. Of course Frodo would call upon those names in his darkest moment. That's what Gildor and Strider taught him to do, through blessing and song. That is why this moment is so powerful. As Tolkien explained in his essay on fairy stories, quote, it is the mark of a good fairy story, of the higher and more complete kind, that however wild its events, however fantastic or terrible the adventures, it can give to child or man that hears it, when the turn comes, a catch of the breath, a beat and lifting of the heart, or indeed accompanied by tears. Even modern fairy stories can produce this effect sometimes. It is not an easy thing to do. It depends on the whole story, which is the setting for the turn to a sudden joy. I cannot express in words how much this idea amazes me, and how so perfectly Tolkien pulls it off here, in the final paragraphs of only Book 1 in The Lord of the Rings. Yes, this is Book 1 of 6, not 3, but I'll explain that next time. And for anyone who thinks that Tolkien lacks strong female characters simply by counting screen time in the story, so to speak, to you I say it might be time to reconsider that assumption, starting right here with the catastrophic triumph of Frodo's defiant oath. By Elbereth and Lúthien the Fair, you shall have neither the ring nor me.
Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to support the Lore of the Rings podcast, visit ringspodcast.com/member. If you found today's Wandering of Middle-earth to be inspiring, please share this episode with a friend. Lastly, if you would like to connect with me, I am most active on Threads. Find a link to my profile at ringspodcast.com and tap the at symbol near the top. And thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the Roaring Twenties. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.